From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, the evolution of everything. I'm looking forward to that. Here's what's happening. Oh, boy, if you like to eat a lot of processed meat, get ready for this. Eating processed meat can cause cancer in humans. While red meat is a likely cause of this disease, according to the World Health Organization, the experts in their findings said that this will sharpen the debate over the merits of a meat-based diet for sure. Now, the French-based International Agency for Research on Cancer, which is part of the WHO, put processed meat like hot dogs and ham in its group. That's way up on the list, which also includes tobacco, asbestos, and diesel fumes, for which they say is sufficient evidence of cancer links. Our food safety coach, Jeff Nelkin, with us. Now, Jeff, this doesn't mean don't eat hot dogs or salami or anything like that, does it?
Well, what we're saying is that, you know, moderation in the diet, they're talking about, you know, cutting back on the frequency, because a lot of Americans are eating these items like 5 and 6 and 7 times a week.
Wow. Now, is it the nitrates in the processed food that they're concerned about? What is it exactly? Do we know?
It's a combination of the nitrates that you're talking about. It's also a combination of the temperature. In other words, the more you carbonize protein, the more it leans towards being carcinogenic. So it's the degree, you know, in which everybody likes everything well done and crispy and burnt, and too much of that also leads into the same situation.
So does this include, like, deli meats, if you go to the deli and you want a corned beef sandwich?
Yeah, that's my favorites, your favorites included. I think what they're basically coming back to is saying, you know, there's an increase of cancer in the United States, and we need to start taking a look at how we eat. And the other finding was interesting, that the people that are eating a lot of these deli meats and a lot of the processed meats are also low on high fiber. So they're kind of like, you know, it's a slippery slope. They're eating these foods, and at the same time, the healthy part of it, they're not eating either. You know, so there's a decrease in fiber and things that can kind of balance this off.
Track Jeff's website, foodsafetycoach.com. He's got great information there. Sad story out of Afghanistan and Pakistan. Rescue efforts are being stepped up to help those affected by a magnitude 7.5 earthquake. That's a big one. At least 275 people already known to have died, up to 2,000 injured. Those lists will increase. Listen to this story. U.S. military and intelligence officials are very anxious about Russian submarines and spy ships operating around undersea global communications cables, adding that the main concern is that Russia could cut the cables during conflict. I'm sure we would do the same thing, but you know what? We live in a wired world, don't we? A U.S. Navy ship has sailed close to artificial islands built by China in the disputed waters of the South China Sea. We got to watch out for that situation. One person still missing after a whale-watching vessel capsized for an unknown reason off the west coast of Canada. 5 people died in that horrible mishap. Captain Kelly Sweeney, who follows all these maritime tragedies for us. Kelly, another sad story to report. Jeez.
Boy, George, yes it is. And the information that I have was that the Leviathan 2, 65-foot whale-watching boat, was hit broadside, according to eyewitnesses, by a large swell. And yesterday, now this is an area that's not too far from where I live, and it's an ocean area, but yesterday the swells were around 9 to 13 feet.
Wow.
But according to the eyewitness, the boat got hit broadside, people got thrown in the water overboard, no time for any action, and the boat ended up on its side starting to take on water.
I mean, how sad can it get, Kelly? They go out to have a good time. They want to spot some whales, you know, one of Mother Nature's greatest, I think, creations. And then a huge wave and a series of waves topple the boat, 5 dead, another missing. I mean, how bad does it get?
Well, George, any time that you go out on a boat, regardless of where it is, there's a potential for a dangerous situation. If the listeners are out in a situation like this and the weather starts getting rough, first thing they should do is get their life jacket on and get out from a enclosed area so they don't get stuck inside the boat somewhere. The second thing that would have been good in this case, in my opinion, there are things that are waterproof, floatable, clip-on bags for cell phones. And I would personally, going out in something like this, have one of those. So if I ended up in the 40-degree water, like these people did, I could immediately use my cell phone call and start effecting a rescue at shore.
Thanks, Kelly. Really appreciate the work you do for us. Now I'm going to put the following stories in the category of what the heck is wrong with people. A 26-year-old Michigan woman has been sentenced to 9 to 20 years in prison for stuffing her newborn son into a plastic bag after giving birth to him at a suburban Detroit workplace. Kimberly Pappas earlier pleaded guilty to second-degree murder under an agreement with prosecutors. Jeez. In Grants, New Mexico, a New Mexico man who had been watching television's The Walking Dead told authorities that he murdered his best friend because he thought he was going to become a zombie. And it was a nightmare on Elm Street for a Texas woman who got quite the pre-Halloween scare. Workers renovating her backyard this month found an old rusted coffin with bones still inside. Dee Dee Oliveira, who recently bought the house on Elm Street in Mission, Texas, said she was shocked when the casket was unearthed. "I'm like, a coffin? What do you mean a coffin? I can't explain it. It was huge. It had handles." Well, inside the bones, the previous owner apparently put his beloved Cocker Spaniel there in the coffin. And later on, the workers dug up more bones, these from a cat inside a toolbox. Wow. Well, that movie about Steven Jobs, his career is a flop at the box office. Might be one of those movies you want to watch on Amazon or Netflix whenever they come to that home screen, because they just grossed $7.3 million at the box office over the weekend. That is horrible for Hollywood. Just no interest in a movie like that. People are turning to scary things and drama. That's what they want. Venus, Jupiter, and Mars can be seen from Earth's skyline this week in a very rare grouping of the three planets. Who's going to be looking at that? None other than Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky. It's going to be another great situation, Stephen.
Oh, George, this is fantastic. And we begin right now for the listeners who have dark skies. If you look out, that majestic, beautiful moon, the full Hunter's Moon, only 225,000 miles away. But if your interest is peaking, stay up early, because I've been watching it, and hopefully you have, George, and many of the listeners. You know, this conjunction of Jupiter and Venus is really spectacular. They're about the diameter, George, of that full moon.
Yeah.
That's a good way to understand just how close they are. To the lower left, by about 3 or 4 degrees, you'll see the red planet Mars, rather faint, but still visible with the naked eye, and it gets better. Over the next few days, they all come together, George, within a 5-degree separation in the sky. But, you know, I had to do this for the show tonight and this morning. I had to check something here to see that I was correct on this. Venus and Jupiter have come extremely close together in history. They've come so close that they've occulted each other. This last happened, get a load of this, June the 17th of 2 BC. Hey, that sounds like the Star of Bethlehem.
It does.
Indeed, George, they came so close together, they converged. The next one, if we can see it at all, and it's hard to see it, drop the date down, November the 22nd of 2065, when these two objects converge again, but they'll only be 8 degrees away from the sun, too close to the sun. Naturally, George, check us out at drsky.com and our photo and aviation site. Always great stuff at photorecon.net.
Love talking space with you, Stephen. Thanks so much. Well, this is the week leading up to Ghost on Friday night, and then my colleague Dave Schrader will be having his Halloween extravaganza on Coast to Coast on Saturday. So all kinds of great shows coming up for you as we build to a very scary Ghost to Ghost night. And up next, we're going to talk with a practicing witch. Stand by for a noted author on witchcraft and a witch, Raven Grimassi, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Looking forward to this. Raven Grimassi is a practicing witch and award-winning author as well. More than 20 books on witchcraft, Wicca, magic, inner mystery traditions. He brings to the table 40-plus years of personal experience, study, in-depth understanding of these fields. Raven is a very popular lecturer and workshop presenter all across the country. And his life work is to preserve the roots of the pre-Christian European spirituality and mystical themes. Raven, welcome to Coast. I love this week, and I'm glad you're with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Is it accurate, and is it proper to simply say you're a practicing witch?
Yes, that is indeed what I am.
How did you become a practicing witch?
Well, I've been actually practicing most of my life. I come from a tradition, old world tradition. I entered really the public arena in the summer of 1969 when I got involved with Wicca and some of the modern witchcraft traditions that were, you know, going at the time. So it's been many decades now of practicing what I call the old religion.
When people hear Raven Witch, I think a lot of them get the wrong impression. They think that, you know, you cook kids and, you know, you do evil spells and everything else. I try to tell them, no, this is different. You know, Hollywood and storybooks, that's one thing. I hope I'm right. Am I?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, witchcraft is certainly not about any of those things. These are stereotypes and superstitions that people have had for, you know, centuries. You know, essentially, witchcraft is a well-rooted in ancient theme system. It's really about understanding the natural world and the supernatural world, how to tap into energies and be part of natural cycles that are going on. So it's really more of an enchanted worldview rooted in nature and the dynamics of all that.
So many people, Raven, during this time of year, or just about any time, confuse witches with being Satanists. And
right. There's
a huge difference there, isn't there?
Yeah, there really is. It's two different philosophies completely. Now, there's Satanists identify themselves differently, as some witches do, so there's really not what I would call a universal or commonality when you begin to define these things. But in essence, if you're a Satanist, then you would adhere, at least in some level, to the Judaic Christian idea of a devil or a satanic being, or something related to that. And witchcraft is actually predates that, and so you don't find that figure in pre-Christian European spirituality or religion. There is no devil figure. The devil actually is an import, if you think about it, from the Middle East. It comes from the ideas of some of the tribes there in the Middle East, and also from Hebraic mythology, or what they would call the Bible. You would have this character called Satan, which was adapted into Christianity, but really had nothing to do with the witches in the pre-Christian time.
As a community, do you get together with other witches?
Yes, it is a for myself. Witchcraft is also a spirituality or a religion, and so we do practice rituals that emphasize the season, and what they call the cross quarters, which we just celebrated. Most people will celebrate it on the eve of November, and so we gather with others of our kind and celebrate and you know, work our magic and whatever needs to be done.
Do you have fun during Halloween though?
Well, I do personally. I mean, I sort of enjoy the holiday itself, you know, among the mundane, you know, just to be watch the trick-or-treaters and you know, enjoy the young kids in their costumes and that type of thing. So I enjoy that, but that's not part of my spirituality or religion. It's what I see others doing based upon, you know, what was the old ways. Halloween is kind of a split off from what actually was very rooted in ancient thought about spirits of the dead and that type of thing.
Do you get dressed up at all, though, during Halloween?
Well, I don't dress for Halloween, but I certainly dress for rituals that we do. And in my tradition, we wear black robes, black hooded robes, because black symbolizes procreation. Everything comes from darkness or blackness. You know, we were born from the darkness of our mother's womb. The sun and moon rise up seemingly from the dark underworld of the earth, you know, this is ancient thought. So black is that procreative. Possibilities are endless in the blackness.
What is exactly the garb for being a witch?
To wear for ritual?
Yeah, what do you generally wear? Male and female.
A black hooded robe is typically what I wear. Other people in other traditions might, you know, use some other type of garb that would be more priestly. But
are you there?
Oh yeah, you know, people would also wear jewelry along with that. Usually they might wear, you know, rings or necklaces or some type of headdress or something. Some people wear a crescent jewel type thing on their forehead to represent the feminine aspect of divinity. Some people wear a headband that might have antler horns on it to represent the past.
I hear another witch whispering to you, by the way. Is that, am I hearing that correctly? Raven, are you there?
Yes.
I can hear
you. You heard another witch whispering.
I could hear another witch in the background.
That was my wife, yeah.
Oh, well, maybe I should apologize for calling her a witch, because I don't know
she's
a witch.
Right? No, she lights in it as I do.
All right. Now, there are images that I would guess comes from Hollywood and comic books and you name it about witches, like, you know, the haggard face, the green warded witch. Where does that come from?
Well, there are various thoughts on it. I lean more towards the idea that some commentators have come up with, that this goes back to the days of the persecution of witchcraft, in which people could be tortured and then executed if they were accused and found guilty of practicing what people thought was witchcraft at the time. And when they would torture these people, they kept them in cells and they would be laying there, you know, their hair matted and probably in their own blood, their teeth broken by torture, faces all swollen by being beaten. And when they died, they would lay them out on planks in the village square to show people that the witch was dead. Well, by then her skin had discolored.
Oh, okay.
And so people would come out and they'd never really seen a witch. And so here they would see this poor woman, you know, with a discolored skin and you know, these swollen face that made her look sort of distorted and maybe even sort of wicked looking. And they thought, oh, that's what a witch looks like. You know, that's just one thought of how that might have come about. And then some people just think it came from Hollywood, you know, sort of the Wizard of Oz theme where they tinted the face of the witch, you know, on that particular movie set. So there's lots of different ideas, but I think it may well be rooted in the idea of what people physically saw, in the appearance of these poor women and who were brutalized in the persecution.
Now the broom and, you know, in the huge or in the cauldrons and, you know, and all those images, Hollywood too.
I'm sorry, say that again.
The broom and all that other stuff, was that from Hollywood too?
No, I think that definitely has rootedness. You know, most people had cauldrons in days of old, and there's lots of mystical ideas associated with cauldrons in mythology. Cauldrons of regeneration, cauldrons of mysticism. And I think the idea of the witch and the cauldron is the brewer of mystical, you know, potions and the regenerative powers. We have the story of Medea, for example, in pre-Christian literature. And she has a cauldron that she puts people in to revive them, to bring them back to life, or to change them in some fashion. So that's a very old connection, the cauldron and the witch. The broom, some people speculate, has to do with the agricultural connections, that the witch was a harvester of herbs and worked with plants. And so this idea of the broom was almost a symbol, if you will, an agricultural mystical symbol of the power of the witch to hold that in her hands. There's many different thoughts on that, but those are a couple.
Does a witch practice the religion of Wiccan? Is that accurate?
Well, Wicca and witchcraft, back in the 60s, were one and the same.
Right.
But that changed over the decades, and somewhere around the 1980s, it seemed to split off, and Wicca became what they called the religion, and then witchcraft became the practice of spells.
All right, hold on for a second, Raven. We're going to take this quick break. We're going to come back and talk more. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and all his works on witchcraft are listed there. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Raven Grimassi with us as we talk about witchcraft. And again, he noted author on witchcraft. They're great reads, by the way. Raven, we're talking about how witchcraft and Wicca kind of broke apart. When they did that, exactly how did people handle that? People who thought originally that they were all one and the same, they split up. What happened?
Exactly. It did become confusing. I cut my teeth on the earlier models, so for me, they're still interchangeable. But you find that that's not true, especially among the younger people. Wicca became more of a religion that took on other cultural elements. It took on a lot of things from Eastern mysticism, like chakras and, you know, ideas like that, auras and this type of thing. So it became a little bit different, a little bit more eclectic. Witchcraft was seen as the practice, but most practitioners, at least in the early decades that I was involved with it during this shift, they saw it both as a religion and a practice. Today, some Wiccans will call themselves witches. Some Wiccans don't identify themselves as witches. So it's kind of a different path now. It's changed so much, actually, that when I'm on the internet and people, you know, talk about Wicca, I sometimes just don't recognize what I knew Wicca to be back in the 60s. So there's been a lot of changes.
We used to have a guest on, Raven, God rest her soul, Evelyn Paglini. We called her the Good Witch. She always came on and talked about spells and things like that, but always in a positive way, positive light. Are there some good witches along with evil witches? I mean, as we have in society with people in general?
Well, I think it's true of any group. You know, you have people that, misbehave or people that do things that are heinous, but it's not part of the ways of witchcraft. You know, witches tend to look at magic, for example, the way we would look at the earth itself and weather. You know, a storm can water your crops, which you would think is a good thing, or a storm can destroy your crops, which you would think is a bad thing, but the intent of the storm was neither. It was just energy. And so I think a lot of witches don't really define things as good or evil, just as forces of nature and how that works out. But there's always going to be some people who will abuse the power that they can tap into. I mean, that's unfortunately human nature. So you do find it in witchcraft just as you do in other religions and organizations.
Some of the spells and some of the magic that's associated with witchcraft, tell me a little bit about that and how that works.
Well, there's different ways in which magic works in spellcraft. In some cases, it's not unlike prayer. It's the idea of forming a thought or a desire and putting some energy behind it, some emotion, some passion into it. Witches use a lot of symbolic things, like a candle, for example, colored green to work for money magic, because green and money are sort of what we see in our society as a symbol. So they may incorporate green candles into it. They may put symbols like even a dollar sign or just something to symbolize the thing they're trying to attract. Because the old idea was if you could show the symbol of what it is you sought, you could draw the thing to you. It's called mimic magic. It's a very old form of magic. So it really is about tapping into energy, putting your thought and your desire into that energy, and then directing it towards manifestation. That's the basic formula.
Evelyn was a big believer in candles in magic. Do you use candles? Do other witches use candles? And the different colors, she said, were used for different purposes.
Right. Yeah, candles help you, what I call self-enchant. You know, you light a candle, you can settle into a certain headspace, watch the flame of the candle, becomes mystical in your mind, calms you down and puts you in a little bit of an altered state of consciousness. Then the color of the candle will suggest to you on inner levels whatever it symbolizes, you know, red for passion, green for money, you know, whatever it might be. So it's sort of helping you align towards the thing you desire. So in this way, candles help you self-enchant to move you into a magical mindset, if you will.
Now, you said your wife is a witch as well. Was she a witch when you met her, or did she change and come over that way?
Yeah, no, she was already a practitioner when we met.
Well, that makes it easy.
It does.
I've got so many people with our paranormal date site that really want to date people who understand them, who get sure. with what they do. And I'm not sure you could have met someone who's not a witch who would get you or understand you. Was that ever a problem?
Ever. Well, there were, you know, in my 20s, you know, dating and that type of thing. That did become problematic. And it would be even more so now because my entire life, you know, is centered on witchcraft, lecturing, doing workshops, writing books. It's my world. And so it would be very difficult, I think, for someone who wasn't a witch to be in a relationship with me because it'd just be, there'd be too much. It would always be the center of everything. And I think that they probably couldn't handle that.
Yeah. Tell me about the spells that some things are associated with witchcraft, spells for relationships, for a better job. And these are positive spells. I'll talk about the evil ones later that maybe you can help us with. But what about the good spells?
Spellcraft is just a way to sort of get things moving. You know, if you're in a situation like maybe you're in a job that you just really dislike and you want to find another one, you know, move on. Spells can sort of get that energy moving in a way that just sort of dumb luck wouldn't do. You know, so you could just sit, do your magic, whether it's with candles and incense or, you know, whatever it is you're using to propel this energy. And one thing you could do, for example, is you could charge a resume, you know, with a magical intent.
Mm-hmm.
So that turning that resume in, what it really is doing magically, it's just getting you a second look. Whereas, you know, somebody has 50 resumes on their desk and they're just shuffling through them. Yours energetically charged might draw them back to it and say, oh, let me look at this resume again.
That's right.
It's not forcing the person to hire you, but it's sort of getting them to take a second look at you, to notice you in this big stack of resumes. That would be one concept or idea.
See, I've always said that when you're preparing yourself for a job, you know, use your positive thinking, use whatever you have to do, but that'll get you noticed. But it won't get you the job. What'll get you the job is if you're prepared for it and you're skilled for it and you make it happen. So it's a two-fold whammy here where maybe a spell, you want to get a better job and you get that boss to notice your resume, like you just said, but they need to be ready for that job or they're, one, not going to get hired, or two, if they do, they're going to flop and get fired.
Indeed. Your magic has to be reasonable. You know, it has to be something that's feasible. And you're absolutely right. You know, if you're not skilled for a job and you work a spell to sort of get yourself noticed and into that position, if you're not a good candidate for that, yeah, you're not going to last in that. So I think your spell work has to be practical things that would actually work for you once they come, you know, to manifestation. You're absolutely right.
Raven, is it the affirmation that gets these spells accomplished, or is it the spell themselves? I'm wondering if the individual does it for themselves, and they use the candles and they use the little spells that come along with it, but it really is that person that can make it happen.
Well, I think that a great deal of it is your personal will, you know, your mindset and how you go about and achieve things. If that is your mentality, if you're an achiever by nature, then, you know, you've got an extra foot in the door there. But I also believe there's a magical momentum tied to this. There's a way of condensing it and propelling it in a way that maybe wouldn't be how the average person is accomplishing the things that they're doing. So it's just a little bit more oomph behind it when you use magic.
Are you a believer in life after death?
Oh, absolutely.
You are. Always have been?
Yes. Uh-huh.
ghosts?
Well, there are things that people would call ghosts. I mean, there's different types of manifestations of that. You know, some are what I would call sentient ghosts, conscious hauntings, where you can interact with that spirit. But a lot of them is what I call just the loop. It's an imprint of energy. It's a repeated action. You know, you see a ghost come down the hallway and through a door, and that's what it does always, you know, and that's all it does. That's what I call a loop that replays. But there are times when spirits, ghosts can interact with you, and in that case, you're working with something sentient, something that's aware of you and can respond in some ways to your presence.
I was going to say, can some witches conjure up a spirit?
Well, that is part of witchcraft in itself. You know, one of the earliest accusations in the early days of Christianity was that witches met at the crossroads to summon the dead. It was one of the things that they tried to outlaw, the church did. So we can see references back to that. And in ancient literature, people go to witches to be put into communication with the dead for, you know, they need to learn something from someone who's dead who only knows the answer for, you know, that they need. So this idea of witches summoning the dead, Witch of Endor is one example. Is very ancient, and it is true. People tend to use the old magic for communicating with those who have gone before us.
There's a series on television called American Horror Stories, and one of their series is called The Coven, and it's about witches. It's about witches in a coven, primarily younger women learning to become witches, and they're all fighting with each other and everything else. they're good ones, bad ones, evil ones, you name it. And then some elderly witches who are trying to school them and study them. But have you ever come across anyone in witchcraft who literally could make objects move with thought or anything like that?
No, I've never seen that in the way that you're suggesting. I have seen people, and you know, manipulate a flame on a candle, for example, or manipulate smoke from an incense. But you know, I've never seen anyone lift an object and move it across the room like you see in Hollywood. There are legends and stories about that type of power. There was an occultist named Austin Spar, who had the reputation for being able to do what I would call manifest magic, which is what you're talking about. So I think it can be done. Why you would want to do it would probably be the debate, but by and large, no, I've not seen that type of phenomenon done by witches that I know.
Is witchcraft growing around this planet?
Well, I think so, yes. There has been, like, since the early 1960s, there's been an increase in not only that, but in things that people are exploring that are mystical in nature. I think people are looking for personal empowerment. And I think the reason for that is, you know, people feel like they have no say or no personal power in the world, that everything's, you know, run by the government or their boss or their, you know, whatever it might be. And they feel like they don't really have a way to make things change. And if they do, they don't think it's sufficient enough to make the changes they want. So they turn to the idea of mystical and magical. And unfortunately, a lot of them are seeing these things on TV like you're talking about, and they think that that's what they can achieve. You know, you just wiggle your nose or snap your fingers and, you know, something manifests that you want. Witchcraft's actually hard work. It takes effort. But yeah, I think it is definitely growing. We're seeing that a lot in my wife and I run a course of study. And we see increases over time with the people that are taking our course of study. And so, yeah, I do think it's growing.
Can you take this course of study and become a certified witch, for example? Does that happen?
Well, I don't know about certified.
You are a certified witch.
The study of the old ways, and you can then begin the path of being trained and educated in the ways of the witch.
I mean, do you give out degrees in witchcraft?
No, we don't. I think there are some schools that of witchery that do that. For our course of study, they just get a certificate of completion for having finished the course. We do have initiations, though, in which people are taken through degrees, so we end up with somebody certified as a first degree, a second degree, third degree, that type of thing.
I remember
but growing not the certificates, and I think in the way you're suggesting.
Right, like a diploma. You don't have that.
Right, no. No.
I remember growing up in Detroit, and I always used to remember the media interviewing this witch. And then when I got old enough and became part of that media, I would do that too around Halloween. But her name was Gundella. And, I mean, she was just wonderful. I mean, she played the role of a witch perfectly. And she was a nice lady. And that was my first real exposure to someone who claimed to be a real witch.
Right.
And she wasn't evil, didn't have warts on her face. And she was fun. She was just fun. So, I mean, you know, the media in Detroit interviewed her during occasions, but a lot during Halloween. And she's not with us anymore. But she's up there in witch's heaven or wherever witches go, I guess. But she was fun. There are a lot of people who are enjoyable in witches. I bet you folks have a great time when you all get together.
Oh, we absolutely do. Yeah, it's very, very festive. It's the camaraderie, the kindred nature. It really kind of helps keep you inspired. You know, the beautiful spirits of all the people that we work with. They're amazing people and amazing witches. And yeah, it's a great time.
Now, how many books do you have out on witchcraft and Wicca and magic?
You're right. I have a little over 20. I have one coming out this February on communing with the ancestors. So, yeah.
Good for you. And they're available on Amazon all over the place?
They are, yeah, in any major bookstore. They're also available through my wife's online store called Raven's Loft.
Perfect. And give us that exact website, and we'll get that out there for
it's
you.
It's ravensloft.biz, B-I-Z.
Okay, we'll add that. We've got ravengrimasi.net. We've got houseofgrimasi.com. And so we'll have our webmaster add this to the links.
Oh, great, thank you.
And it's a great time of year. I mean, this is a time of year I think people should just enjoy themselves and have fun. Do you celebrate Thanksgiving and Christmas as well?
Well, we celebrate Thanksgiving, I think, just because it's, you know, it's a social time. It has nothing to do with our witchcraft. Christmas, no, that's a Christian holiday, but we do celebrate Yule, which is around the same time, winter solstice, so we do celebrate that. So it's sort of tied in, but we favor the pagan celebration versus the Christian one.
And now the witches that may have children, and I don't know if you do or not, I don't want to pry too much into your personal life, but...
I do, I have three daughters.
Okay, are they all witches too?
No, they're not.
They're
they
not.
Chose a different path.
Okay, okay. Interesting. I mean, how do they react to you being a witch, to your mother, to their mother being a witch?
Well, they've known me. I mean, of course, all their life. So
your dad, right?
And, you know, dad's like any dad. There's cool things about dad, and there's weird things about dad.
But, I mean, do they go to school and go, my dad's a witch?
Well, actually, I think some of them are rather proud, you know, of the success I've had as an author of books on witchcraft and being a lecturer across the nation.
Indeed, you have.
I think they sort of like that idea. You know, it makes them a little bit proud, I think, that their dad has accomplished that. So,
Raven,
I think it's mostly positive.
When we come back, I want to take phone calls from our great listeners for you. And also, I want to ask you that question about witchcraft. Are you also a warlock? Do they call you a warlock? I always heard that, you know, male witches were warlocks. We haven't used that phrase tonight. Let's talk about that when we come back, too.